produced by the iLab at WBUR Boston.
So welcome, everyone, to our first ever bonus episode. Woo!
Of
Food We Need to Talk. So we're going to be finally answering all the questions that you guys have been sending in via email and Instagram. So we'll be back next week with one of our regular episodes on stress and eating, which I'm super excited to hear about. But in the meantime, we've gotten so many great questions, so we just can't wait to answer them. And I also just wanted to say thank you so much to all the listeners that have reached out to us so far. We've gotten so much great feedback on the podcast, and it's just really exciting that there are actually people listening finally. So a great feeling.
It really is really gratifying to hear what you guys have to say and make it more of a conversation.
I'm Una Jada.
And I'm Dr. Eddie Phillips. And we'll be back in a few weeks with more of your questions, so just keep sending them in. But Una, how do you send in a question?
So you can email us at foodweneedtotalk@gmail.com. And if you do email us, it'd be really cool if you could send a voice memo, because then we get to hear all your beautiful voices. Or you can DM us on Instagram or comment on one of our Q&A memes, because that's very easy, very fast, and we will see all your questions that way.
So let's dive into our first question.
So our first question comes from Darcy, and she listened to our episode on what to eat, and it was all about food quality. And she noticed that the only times potatoes were mentioned, they were kind of in a negative light. So the comment she highlighted in particular was from Walter Willett at the Harvard Chan School of Public Health, and he was talking about the biggest problem with the standard American diet today.
Carbohydrate quality. Overall, we get about half of our calories from carbohydrate, and of that half, about 80% comes from refined starch, sugar, or potatoes, which actually are very rapidly converted into sugar when we eat them.
So Darcy wants to know if potatoes, including sweet potatoes and yams, are considered vegetables, and should she be reducing them or eliminating them completely from her diet? And if not, should they be included on the vegetable half of the plate or the carbohydrate portion of the plate? Also, do quinoa and wild rice count as carbohydrates or vegetables?
Darcy, this is a great clarification question. So first of all, let's tackle the simple part. Is a potato a vegetable? Yes, botanically. It's a vegetable. It grows in the ground. But it's classified nutritionally as a starchy food. That means it should replace the rice, the pasta, the quinoa, the bread in your diet. Do not replace the broccoli, the spinach, and the kale.
So when I was growing up, I thought potatoes were to be avoided at all costs because I really thought they made you fat. But it kind of seems like that's not the whole story here, right?
No, not quite. So first off, let's go back, Una, to not labeling foods as good or bad. Remember that whole discussion that we had?
Episode 2 for listeners.
Maybe we'll talk about foods that are healthier and those that are not so healthy. With potatoes, if you look at the studies from afar, what's interesting is that potato consumption, how many potatoes are we eating in America? Lots. And it seems eating potatoes is actually correlated with things that we don't want. More potatoes leads to more weight gain, correlated with more diabetes, cardiovascular disease, increased mortality. But what you should consider is actually the kinds of potatoes or how the potatoes are being eaten. If they're deep fried or they're hash browns, then maybe better to do without them for the most part. But if they're just steamed, they can be a great source of potassium, vitamin C, and the B vitamins.
So, Eddie, what about sweet potatoes? Are they a vegetable or a starch? Because I eat them all the time, and I freaking love them. They're so good.
They're quite popular.
Yeah.
And they should be considered just like we're considering the white potatoes. So the sweet potatoes, the yams, the white potatoes, they all belong on the starch portion of your plate. But, Una, if you're trying to choose between the white potatoes and the sweet potatoes, I would choose the more colorful one because you're going to get additional benefits like a whopping dose of beta carotene, vitamin C, and other vitamins and minerals. And here's an extra tip. No matter what kind of potato you're eating, keep the skin on it. It's going to give you a healthy dose of fiber, and that's going to make you feel full.
Great. So our next question comes from Stu over on Instagram, and he heard on one of our episodes Michael Pollan give the following advice.
Eat real food, avoid edible food-like substances. Not too much, you know, we're eating too much. And lastly, mostly plants, because one of the things we know is that a substantially plant-based diet is better for you.
So in addition to this, Stu says that a lot of nutrition advice tells you to run a calorie deficit or burn more than you consume and you'll lose weight. He says, for me, though, this leads to obsessive and ultimately unsustainable and unhealthy calorie counting. Stu, I have been there. What is the best way to make sure you observe a successful and sustainable calorie balance without going crazy?
This is a great question.
Yeah, I love this question. This is like the question of the podcast, really.
This is it, right? But really quickly, just so we're all on the same page, it's true that anytime you run a calorie deficit, as Stu said, that means you're burning more than you're eating. You will lose weight. Sometimes it's just fat, but more often you're going to lose both fat and muscle.
So, Eddie, I think the real problem here is that, like Stu, I found that counting calories would always lead to being kind of obsessive and then being kind of restrictive and then overeating after a week because I was eating so little and then basically just like undoing my progress over and over and over. So the name of the game has basically been finding a way to keep calories in check and eat nutritiously without counting calories.
And how'd you get there?
It took months and months of practice and a lot of trial and error. But basically, I found a few things that did help me. And one of the first things was limiting processed food.
So there was this amazing study. I'm going to call it the study of the year in 2019.
Okay.
By Kevin Hall and his colleagues. And here's the way they set it up. If you signed up for this, you were checking into the NIH clinic, National Institutes of Health, for 4 weeks.
Wow.
And they would flip a coin. And for the first 2 weeks, you would either get ultra-processed food, as much as you wanted to eat, or you would get unprocessed food, as much as you wanted to eat. Okay, so this is like America. You just eat whatever you want. And what they found on average is that the group that was going through and getting the ultra-processed food, during those 2 weeks, every day, they ate about 500 calories extra. And if you do the math, they ended up gaining 2 pounds in that 2 weeks.
Ooh.
But the good news was, when they switched and got the unprocessed food, they ended up losing those 2 pounds and eating 500 calories less.
Which, like, if you extrapolated that to a year, guys, that's like 50 pounds. That's a lot of extra food.
That's about right.
So another thing that I think could also help but is a little more subtle are things that Dana Small, professor of psychology and psychiatry at Yale School of Medicine, told us in episode 6. She says that you can create new habits.
And some of them just make a lot of sense, like eat slowly. Eat unprocessed foods. Don't eat unless you're hungry. Don't keep snacks and cues around.
A few other small things are not eating with your dominant hand. So if you're right-handed, eating with your left hand, or if you're left-handed, eating with your right hand. That's been shown to actually help people eat less without
them eating. Must slow you down at least, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It slows you. It's really hard. You should try it out. It's actually really hard. And then also remember that drinking your calories is a really easy way to overconsume without even noticing it.
Right. It doesn't make you feel full when you drink those calories.
Nope.
So let's look at the next question. This one comes from Finzo via Instagram.
So Finzo sent us a ton of questions and suggestions for episodes. Thank you so much, Finzo. But for this bonus episode, we decided to focus on the following question. When you talk about this plate, how big is it? What are the proper serving sizes for each portion? How many plates per day should you be eating? Are you supposed to be snacking? Healthy ones, of course. So he's referring to the plate that we talked about in episode 4 that Walter Willett brought up. So Eddie, I'm going to let you go at this.
Well, so this plate apparently is a moving target. The average American plate is getting bigger. If you find the china that maybe your grandmother left for you, and you measure it, it's about 9 inches across.
Okay.
That was a dinner plate. But by the 1980s, it somehow grew to about 10 inches across.
How did that happen?
And today, it's even closer to 11 inches across.
There's just something satisfying, I think, about finishing your entire plate. So if your plate is bigger, you're just going to eat more naturally. Mm-hmm. And we haven't even talked about restaurant plates, which aren't even plates. They're like giant platters.
So let's go back to the 9-inch plate. You can find them. Go ask your grandma for some of her old plates. In general, the amount of meals might be flexible. It really depends on what works for you. But 3 proper meals a day is generally a good guideline. And there is no conclusive evidence that eating more frequently burns more calories.
Oh, I used to totally buy the idea that if you ate all the time, your metabolism would just be like increasing because you were eating more frequently.
Yeah, but there's no science there.
Okay, yeah.
We've looked into it.
Our next question comes via email in a voice memo. Here it is.
Hi, guys. So my name's Michaela. I'm from Colorado. And my question is about portion control. So is portion control really the key to losing weight and keeping it off? I want to know if I can actually eat whatever I want as long as I don't eat too much. Thanks.
So first of all, Michaela, thank you so much for sending in a voice memo because it's so cool to hear other voices besides me and Eddie's. As you can imagine, we've gotten very tired of hearing our own voices. And Eddie, do you want to go with the question?
Yeah, but let's tackle it after this break.
Okay.
Yuna, just before the break, we heard from Michaela who wants to know if she can really eat anything she wants as long as she reduces the portion size. Well, cutting down on portions is definitely part of what we need to be doing. But the other thing to remember is that you can't just manage portions and not think about the nutrient density. The nutrient density means how much nutrients are in the food that you're getting per calorie. So, for example, someone can keep their weight in check by eating junk food. Uh-oh. As long as you're not eating a lot of it. But it doesn't make them healthy. You can't just live on Twinkies. You're not going to get the vitamins, the minerals, and all of the real nutrition that your body needs.
If you're interested in this, Michaela, there's a guy who actually ran this study where he lost 30 pounds just eating Twinkies, and he would basically have a Twinkie for breakfast, Twinkie for lunch, Twinkie for dinner. And just because it was low enough calorie, he did lose weight,
but that really did not make him a healthy person.
Yeah,
exactly. So all in all, portions are important. We're definitely eating too much. But also remember that the main job of food is to nourish our bodies. So let's fill our plates with things that give our bodies what they need.
So, Eddie, I think we should talk about a question slash comment that we've gotten from a lot of people on social media and from emails. And that is about the sponsorship of Food We Need to Talk by Noom, which is a weight loss system. So first of all, we should say that WBUR accepts underwriting and sponsorship from a wide variety of commercial and nonprofit organizations. That's part of what pays for the news and what pays for the podcast. Just like advertisements on TV and the internet, they just, you know, they help get the show on the road. In fact, guys, all these episodes were pretty much done before we even knew Third Love and Noom were going to be sponsors, so they definitely had no control whatsoever on any of the content.
Also, Yuna, if I could be a little philosophical here.
Sure.
I want to present with you credible science, compassion, caring, and common sense to address some of the societal issues that we have with our food environment, and also to further the conversation about food and diet culture. I really look forward to continuing this conversation.
So a great way to continue the conversation is with the next listener question
from
Desiree, who sent it via voice memo.
Hi, Yuna. Hi, Eddie. I'm loving your podcast. And today I have a question for you about 30-day or 10-day or 2-week, et cetera, type of food challenges that you hear about a lot, especially at the beginning of the year. Do you think these are truly helpful in transforming your relationship to food?
So, Eddie, I'm curious to hear what you think about this because I think that they are definitely transformative. Transformative in a bad way, okay? Because when I used to do these food challenges, I would basically do them with the secret hope that I would lose 10 pounds. And that's kind of counter to the whole idea of making a change for life. So with short-term motivation, you can do any food challenge. Like, you can do a 20-day, you can do a 30-day, but your life is like thousands and thousands and thousands of days. Okay, life is the ultimate food challenge. Mm-hmm. So I just think doing these short-term kind of like cleansy type things would just lead to extreme dieting with an expiration date, basically. And that's just what I found basically in my experience.
But I would push back a little bit and actually examine what your motivations are for going on a diet like that. So if you're just going to try to lose the weight, then, and you don't have an exit plan, then probably not the best idea, as we've talked about. But if you're doing it to learn something about yourself, maybe you want to see what you're intolerant to. So let's say you cut out dairy for a week. Let's say you actually get rid of the processed foods that we've been going on about.
Right.
You can learn a lot, but it's got to influence what happens next. If you just go back to the same old diet, you're going to be back where you started.
Yeah. So now we can move on to our last question of the day. I know, very sad, very sad. This question comes from Kevin L. via email. So Kevin gained some weight and he noticed that people were commenting on it, but he says, I still feel like the same person. I haven't noticed a big difference, but apparently many others think otherwise. I'm considering shedding off a few pounds and I would only want to do it for myself and no one else. Do you have any suggestions? I'm considering being the healthiest I can, more exercise and more healthy eating, while not intentionally trying to lose weight because I'm not a fan of diets. Hear, hear.
Let me jump in here to say that Kevin's story really resonates with my experience.
Oh?
Yeah.
Do tell.
Well,
so the juicy gossip.
There was a stressful time in my life after college. I went through medical school, residency, then early work as an attending.
I hear that's hard. I hear it's not the easiest. Yeah.
And we had our first kid. And I didn't realize, but I was dutifully keeping in lockstep with the American average, and I was gaining about a pound or a pound and a half every year.
Uh-huh.
I go to my personal physician who gently points this out to me.
Okay.
Actually, Una, he was not that gentle.
Uh-huh.
I was up 15 pounds over my healthy weight from before medical school. So I ask him, well, how much weight can I gain each year? The guy frowns and holds his hands up in the shape of a large zero.
So no weight should be being gained on average.
No. After you're finished growing as a child,
right.
That's your weight.
Okay.
So just like Kevin, I would swear I was the same person. Apparently, I was just a heavier person. It was then that I actually started to make some changes. I used to love sugar-sweetened drinks. Those iced teas. Remember when Snapples came out?
I bought like a case at a time. Well, I don't remember, but
sorry.
I'm sure back in the dinosaur ages, yes, Snapple came out at some
point. We'd buy like a case at a time. And then I started watching my portion sizes. And I started to make the shift from maybe I can no longer eat as much as I want, and I should maybe start to eat as much as I need.
Oh.
It is so easy to fall into that pattern of gaining excess weight, especially because it's so common. So I like the idea that Kevin is doing this for himself.
So Kevin, just to give you some concrete stuff, if you're listening to stuff in the podcast and you think like, oh, I'm going to start cooking more or I'm going to start exercising mm-hmm. more, I just think choose one thing at a time to change for a few weeks so that it really sticks and then see how that affected your body and if it works for you. And then you can add something else. And then that way, over the course of a year, you'll have built up a completely new, like healthy way of living rather than doing everything all at once and then just making it unsustainable and then going back to whatever you were doing before.
And keep us in the loop as you try these things
out. Yeah, keep us in the loop, Kevin. Oh my God, Kevin, keep us in the loop and send us emails. We'll check them. So this has been so much fun. Thank you to all our listeners for sending in such amazing questions. I only wish that we had more time to answer more questions, but do not worry. Do not fret. I know that you were so upset this episode is over.
Let's do it again.
We're going to come back and do it again. So it's not too late to send in your questions. Remember, there's two main ways to get them to us. Send them to our email, foodweneedtotalk@gmail.com. Send us a voice memo to hear your voice on the pod, because that's really fun. Or send us a DM on Instagram or leave a comment on Instagram. Just do anything on Instagram. I will see it and I will write down the question. The Instagram handle is @foodweneedtotalk. It's bomb diggity. You should follow it. It's super fun.
What she said. And if you guys are enjoying these episodes, don't forget to go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. It really helps other people find the podcast.
It really, really helps, guys. Please leave a review if you like the podcast.
And next week's episode is something you'll definitely want to tune in for, because it's something that is universal. Something we all deal with.
Yes, it's stress. Stress and how it affects your eating and your health. You don't want to miss it. Make sure you tune in. Mondays, the episode drops.
Food We Need to Talk is a production of WBUR.
Our editor and producer is George Hicks, and this episode was mixed by Paul Kalo.
Our supervising editor is Elizabeth Harrison. Our executive producer is Carrie Goldberg.
With additional technical and editorial help from Catherine Brewer, Paul Vitkus, and the WBUR iLab. I'm Una Jada.
And I'm Dr. Eddie Phillips.
And we'll see you
next
in our
time.
Stress episode.